please the court, Mr. Wickner. My name is David Zook, registration number 3031. I represent the appellants in this matter. Happen to be myself and my brother. The appellants retired from the El Paso County retirement plan, I'm sorry, from the district attorney's office in January of 2005. And 3 years later, they brought this action against the El Paso County retirement plan based upon a breach of contract for its failure to allow the appellants to repurchase lost service credit and failure to pay their retirement allotments pursuant to what they would have earned had that repurchase taken place. The appellants each had briefly left the district attorney's office in Colorado Springs.
Mr. Zook, let me ask you first, in your complaint, which claim for relief is this that you're referring to?
Well, it's for breach of contract, Judge.
You have a breach of fiduciary duty, an equitable estoppel, three breach of breach of contract claims, and a breach of statute. And you're referring here to a breach of contract based on a failure to allow repurchase. And I'm wondering which of your claims that is.
Your Honor, all of the claims relating to breach of contract is what I'm relying upon.
All three of them?
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Zook, let me follow up on that. If your claim, and I think it does, depends on an alleged breach in not allowing repurchase of lost credit years, when did the plan first not allow you and your brother to repurchase prior years?
Well, when we first returned to employment, Judge, we didn't know about the right to repurchase. And in those days, there's absolutely no information to send.
Understood. And then in 1997, you specifically asked and were denied the right to repurchase.
I did ask, I think, on three separate occasions, Your Honor, to repurchase, and each time I was turned down. There was no, for one thing, the plan has no internal appeals process, so it's just open. The plan could change its mind at any time. They have new members elected periodically, and in fact, they did vacillate on the issue over the course of a number of years. When I first asked, they tabled it for a while. They ordered a study. The study seemed to show that the plan could bear the cost of repurchase with a little damage to the plan, and yet they still didn't really answer my request.
Until 97.
And eventually I asked them for clarification, what are you going to do? And at that point in time, they said I could not, they would not allow me to repurchase.
And that point in time was 97?
Probably, but it was certainly beyond the three-year statute of limitations that the trial court was utilizing in this particular case.
Mr. Zook, my concern is that for your appeal here, probably we need to understand, and you need to be talking about the evidence in this case. And we have a letter dated March 24, 1997, that says your request has been denied.
That's correct, Judge.
Okay. So why did not your claim accrue at that point? Your request had been denied.
Mm-hmm.
You believe they had a contract obligation to grant your request. Why didn't your claim for a lawsuit accrue right then?
Well, because, Judge, that's what our whole argument is, that it was merely an anticipatory breach of contract, and that they could certainly grant my request at any time prior to retirement. And that's exactly what the case of the Belknap, the New Hampshire case of Belknap, stands for. It also, I think, is buttressed.
But did they have a duty? What I'm understanding is that what you wanted to do was to pay back into the fund, and for them to let you pay back into the fund.
That's correct.
And you're saying it was an anticipatory breach when they denied you the opportunity to do that because sometime at your retirement, then they could let you do it later?
It's basically, Judge, they're saying we're not going to let you pay it in and thereby repurchase your service credits. What I'm saying is that there was nothing final about that. I could have repurchased my credit at any time prior to retirement. All they had to do was say, yes, you can.
And it was their duty to do that, you say?
Well, yes, I think the plan required that. The plan required that persons be treated in a non-discriminatory manner. There have been other parties that have been allowed to repurchase their service credits, even though the alleged time frame had expired. And I was just asking to be treated, and my brother, in a manner equal to those parties.
But what I don't understand is how this is anticipatory. If you believe that they had a duty right then to grant your request, I don't understand how that is an anticipatory breach as opposed to a current breach.
I believe they had a duty, Judge, to allow me not only to repurchase it, but to pay me my retirement pursuant to what I would have earned had I been allowed to repurchase the lost service credit. And I think it's a classic case of anticipatory breach. If you're going to require people to bring lawsuits at that point in time, it just isn't going to happen.
Let me understand whether it's good policy or bad policy as to what we require is not my question. What makes it an anticipatory breach? I mean, as I understand an anticipatory breach is that it's saying we don't plan to fulfill our end of the bargain.
Well, the final end of the bargain would be to pay me according to my lost service credit. That's all. The first step is to repurchase your lost service credit. The next step is to be paid according to all of your prior service years. And what was anticipatory was that they weren't going to pay me according to those prior service years. And they could have allowed me to do that at any time up to when I retired. And just prior to my retirement, I made a final request to them that they allow me to repurchase it and that I be paid according to my lost service credit. And as I said, I think policy is an issue. Policy and the enforcement of statutes of limitation is always an issue. And certainly sound public policy is not to extinguish valid claims if, in fact, there's no public policy that requires that. And I don't.
Mr. Zucca, public policy, I'm confused about why a two-year statute does not apply here.
Well, first of all, because the trial court said it was deciding on the three-year
statute. Well,
secondly, because the
key. I mean, it was before the trial court on a two-year, was it not? He just said, I can decide this using 3 year?
Well, it was basically conceded at that point that the 3 year statute was going to be used to determine whether or not the statute.
But why does 2 year not work?
Well, that wasn't because of Fishburne case, for one thing. Fishburne versus the city of Colorado Springs thoroughly discussed contract actions against governmental entities and indicated that the three-year statute would apply to those types of actions because, first of all...
Mr. Zucca, I don't see Fishburne cited in the briefs.
I don't see it. It's cited in my rebuttal brief.
It's cited in your reply?
Yes.
It's not a table of contents, so it's hard to tell, but...
I apologize for that. But
it is cited. It's cited on page 3 at 919-847.
That's correct, Judge.
And Fishburne, it's not discussed, but what does Fishburne hold?
Fishburne holds that in contract actions against governmental entities, that the three-year statute applies. And in fact, the court went through the same analysis that the court in the BP versus Patterson case went through in determining when you have two statutes seemingly applicable, what rule do you follow in order to determine which one controls.
Oh, it's directly on point in your view? It's dispositive of this issue?
Yes, it is, Judge.
And Zubek is distinguishable because it's open records.
That's correct. Zubek, nothing, totally different apples and oranges. In fact, Mr. Rickner, of course, was arguing vigorously that Zubek, that the plan is not a governmental entity. And for purposes of the statute of limitation, the court might well interpret it completely different from the Open Records Act. So,
Under Fishburne, it's your position that the holding is that it is a government entity, but nonetheless, we're going to apply the 3-year contract statute instead of the 2-year.
My position is that it's not a governmental entity, but even if it were.
But Fishburne seems to be clearly City of Colorado Springs. So, Fishburne's holding is that we may have a governmental entity, but nonetheless, we're going to apply a 3-year statute.
Correct, Judge. Yes. Okay. Even if it is a governmental entity, that's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. And with the court's permission, I would like to reserve the. Thank you.
May it please the court, Mr. Zook, Brent Rickner, number 15372. If I may, I'll start by addressing the BP America case. That decision provides no help to plaintiffs, and let me explain why.
You're going to be talking about the 2-year versus 3-year statute, or another point?
Right now.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
We believe the 2-year statute would apply, but in the trial court, for purposes of summary judgment, I did argue, as the Supreme Court did in the Berg case, that the trial court did not need to reach the issue of whether it was a 2- or 3-year statute because the claims were clearly barred under both statutes.
Did Fishburne the way Mr. Zook just read it?
I don't know that it's dispositive, but I did. Fishburne would give support to the argument that if you cannot distinguish between the 2-year and 3-year statute in terms of one applies over the other, the court did apply the longer one. But I think that clearly does not help the plaintiffs here in this case because the claims are barred under both the 2-year and 3-year statute. And
was Zubek rightly decided?
It is binding on the retirement plan. As Mr. Zook mentioned, I did argue that case that we were not a government entity and I was not successful. So I think it does support the application of the 2-year statute.
You'd like this court to decide it under a 3-year statute and do as the district court did and say you lose even under the 3 years?
Yes, just as the Colorado Supreme Court did in Berg, for exactly the same reasons. I believe this court would not need to reach that issue in order to affirm the judgment that the claims are barred by the applicable statute of limitations.
And what about BP America? The Patterson case.
Yes, Judge. In that case, the court held that the accrual provision in 13-80-108, subparagraph 4, that's the accrual provision for actions for debt or money owed, governs only claims for a liquidated or determinable debt. That's at page 813 of the opinion. In other words, that subsection 4 applies only to claims that are governed by the 6-year a limitation period of section 13-80-103.5, subparagraph 1A. The court makes that point again at page 814 of the decision. Here, plaintiffs make no argument in their briefs that the 6-year limitations period applies. In fact, they specifically contend that their claims are governed by the 3-year statute of limitations of section 13-80-101. That's at the reply brief, page 2, as one example. So as the Colorado Supreme Court held in BP America, the accrual statute for claims governed by the 3-year limitation period of section 13-80-101 is found in subsection 6 of 13-80-108, and that's the subparagraph that provides, quote, a cause of action for breach of any express or implied contract agreement or trust shall be considered to accrue on the date the breach is discovered or should have been discovered by the exercise of reasonable diligence.
Let me ask you about the breach as to Daniel Zook. How would you respond to an argument that he requested a restoration of his lost credit years in January of 2005, I believe, and it was denied in February of 2005? And if that if that request was not denied until February 05, the breach occurred in February 05 within the three-year period.
Yes, Judge, you have to look under the three-year statute when the breach occurred. And in this case, the breach, as alleged in the complaint, is the failure to allow plaintiffs to repurchase their years of service and failure to inform them of their right to repurchase those years of service. That occurred in 1985 and 1986 when they were rehired. And under the plan rules, any repurchase had to occur within 12 months of that date. So it's our position that the breach actually occurred at that time, 1986 or 1988 respectively. And so the question under subparagraph 6 of 1380-108, as stated in BP America, is when was that breach discovered? And the evidence for purpose of summary judgment, I think, is clear that he discovered that breach certainly by the time he wrote his request for the same relief that he's asking for in the complaint.
Talking about Daniel, correct?
Daniel, in January of 2005. The alleged breach occurred, and he discovered that breach by that date. It was not a necessary step to the breach to have the plan tell Daniel Zook that we're not going to give you a special relief now from the normal rules of the plan. There's also undisputed evidence in the record that when David Zook received the letter from the plan in 1997 indicating that he would not be allowed to repurchase his years of service, that he did discuss that letter with his brother Daniel.
And you submitted evidence to that effect?
Yes.
Was that the transcript, the deposition transcript?
That's in the deposition transcript. Of David Zook. At page 41 of his deposition.
And was that undisputed by Daniel?
I believe Daniel testified he did not recall one way or the other, but that he may have discussed
it. So for summary judgment, maybe a closer question, but you would say that by January 05, there's no dispute, and by that time at least.
The critical thing is that he understood all the facts related to his alleged right to repurchase and also his claim that the plan had a duty to inform him of that right back in 1988, within the one-year period after he returned to full-time employment in 1987. I'm sorry, I've mixed up the two dates. Daniel returned in 1985, and so his right to repurchase would have expired within 12 months in 1986, and certainly it cannot be disputed that by January of 2005, he was aware of all the facts related to that alleged breach. Going back to the BP America case, so even if plaintiffs had not explicitly waived any claim that the six-year statute of limitations applies, their own complaint makes it clear that the causes of action do not fall within that six-year limitations period for a liquidated or determinable debt. Their claims are, regardless of how they're denominated, all of their claims are premised on the alleged denial of their right to repurchase years of service when they returned to full-time employment in 1985 and 1987. And again, under the plan rules, any repurchase had to occur within 12 months of those dates. That's, if you look at the complaint, the primary or the first relief sought in the complaint is, quote, judgment declaring that plaintiffs are entitled to have their prior credited service restored. That's at page 7 of the record. So based on plaintiffs' characterization of their own claims, and the relief sought, the claims fall under the three-year statute of 13-80-101. There are not claims for liquidated or determinable debt under 1380-103.5, so you have to look at the accrual provision of subsection 6 rather than subsection 4 of 13-80-108. And as Judge Prince correctly found, plaintiff's complaint states a traditional breach of contract claim, the breach being the failure to provide the opportunity to repurchase years of service after the rehire in 1985-1987. He also found that any monetary damages sought by plaintiffs were not determinable by looking at the plan documents. In fact, at the time plaintiffs filed the complaint, even under their theory of the case, the monetary amount they would have had to repay the plan to repurchase their service years would have exceeded any additional retirement benefits due at that time. Again, it was not a complaint to recover a liquidated or determinable debt. And plaintiffs have not contested in this appeal either Judge Prince's determination that the three-year limitations period applies, nor have they made any attempt in this appeal to show that their alleged damages are determinable by looking at the plan documents. And if we take our analysis of BP America one step further, even if we could argue that the accrual provision of subparagraph 4 rather than subparagraph 6 applies, it would not allow their claims to survive. Under the accrual provision of subsection 4, you'd have to look at when performance was due. And here the alleged failure to perform is that the plan did not allow plaintiffs to repurchase service years during the 12 months after they were rehired. Plaintiffs were also required to perform in the form of repaying their withdrawn contributions at the same time. So actually, if the six-year limitations period were applied in combination with subparagraph 4 of 1380-108, their claims would have been barred actually no later than 1994. If we look at the specific claims in the complaint, and starting with the fiduciary duty claims, which I think is certainly the first claim, and the second claim basically has exactly the same language. So I think certainly the first and second claims are fiduciary duty claims, not breach of contract. In any way you look at it, there's no way that plaintiffs' duty claims survive the statute of limitations. In the trial court, plaintiffs characterized the fiduciary duty claim, quote, the plan fiduciary wrongly advised David Zook in 1985 that he had no rights in the plan and failed to inform him in 1987 of time limits applicable to repurchase of service credit, end quote. That's in the record at pages 423 and 424. And they described the fiduciary duty claims with respect to Daniel Zook in exactly the same manner, except that there both critical dates are 1985 because he returned, was rehired full-time within the same year. So the alleged breaches of fiduciary duty occurred no later than 1985 for Daniel Zook and 1987 for David Zook. And then you go to 13-80-101, subparagraph F. That's the statute, three-year statute that applies to breach of fiduciary duty claims. And then under subparagraph 6 of 1380-108, we find that those claims accrue on the date the breach is discovered or should have been discovered with reasonable diligence. We don't have to get into reasonable diligence because the facts are undisputed that David Zook became aware that he had been misinformed of his alleged right to repurchase no later than the early 1990s. That fact is stipulated too. If you look at the proposed trial management order filed by plaintiffs, that's in the record at page 475, paragraph 12. In the same way, plaintiffs concede that Daniel Zook discovered he had been misinformed of his alleged right to repurchase service years sometime between 2002 and the end of 2004. Again, that's a stipulated fact, and that's in the record at page 475, paragraph 17. So based solely on stipulated facts, plaintiffs discovered the alleged breaches of fiduciary duty no later than the early 1990s for David Zook, no later than the end of 2004 for Daniel Zook, and more than 3 years passed before the suit was filed, January 31, 2008. If I could address, appellant addressed the policy implications of this court's decision, I would like to point out the important policy considerations that support affirming the judgment. If plaintiff's theory were accepted in this case, retirement plans or benefit plans would be forced to address or defend against claims for contract or fiduciary duty breaches, often based on oral misrepresentations that allegedly were made decades earlier. That's true in this case. Here, the plaintiff's entire case rests on alleged misrepresentations or omissions allegedly made in 1985 and 1987. Allowing claims to proceed under those circumstances would be contrary to the important public policy considerations underlying statute of limitations. And as the federal court in the Scruggs case emphasized, open quote, plaintiff's proposed rule would allow a prospective claimant to sleep on her rights for her entire career, as defendants argue plaintiff did here for over 20 years, end quote.
Is that what the New Hampshire Supreme Court allowed the plaintiffs to do in the class action in Belknap County, though?
I think Belknap is different, Judge, because there it was simply a matter of whether all the class plaintiffs should have been enrolled pursuant to statute. There was no requirement on either side that performance occur, you know, as is the situation here, where the allegation is based on a failure to allow repurchase of credit, service credit years. So I think that is an important distinction between this case and Belknap, and that's why I think the Colorado Supreme Court's holding in Berg is more closely applicable to this case. And as the Third Circuit remarked in the Gluck decision, if plaintiff's position were adopted, quote, a claim for breach affecting the retirement benefit of a 20-year-old employee might accrue 45 years later. Although the doctrine of latches might preclude the action, we are unwilling to open the door to a 48-year limitations period, end quote. And the Ninth Circuit explained in Martin, quote, to hold otherwise would require all pre-benefits claims against an employee's pension fund to be delayed until retirement and a formal application for benefits is filed. The delay, with its negative effects on availability of witnesses and evidence, is potentially great. The judgment should be affirmed. Thank you.
And there's no evidence in this case that the defendants are prejudiced by the passage of time, and you have to balance that against basically just extinguishing all actions against pension plans for breach of their contractual duties.
What about the BP America?
Yes, Your Honor, the way I read BP is that the claim for relief does not accrue until the owed debt is not paid, and that, of course, does not begin until after retirement. So, in my view, BP is could be dispositive of this case on that basis, and it isn't so. I'm sorry.
So the owed debt, the debt was owed when? When was the
when
debt owed?
When they retired, Judge.
They had a duty on the first payment to pay you as if you had never cashed out.
Yes.
And that duty comes from where?
That duty comes from the plan document, which provides that all retirees or employees are to be treated in a non-discriminatory manner, and they had allowed other persons, lots of other people, to buy past service credit that were without their ridiculous minimal time requirements, and refused to allow us to do that. Yes.
I'm confused about how you can maintain that they had a duty to pay you, in Judge Caporelli's words, as if you'd ever cashed out. They didn't have a duty to that. They had a duty, in your theory, to allow you to repurchase years. But until you repurchase years, you're not really claiming that they had a duty to pay you as if you never cashed out, are you? It isn't a predicate that your first argument is give us the right to repurchase years, then pay us.
I don't think you can separate them, Judge. Our claim, and I would point the court to the third claim for relief, is that they allow us to repurchase, and they calculate our benefits based upon the fact that we had repurchased. And you can't just divide the one from the other. The claims go together, Judge.
Yeah. Exactly. So the breach is not allowing you to repurchase.
Well, the breach is a continuing thing, Judge. The failure to allow us to repurchase does not absolve them of the requirement to pay us according to it as if we had repurchased. So, and there again, you're suggesting that we need to bring an action for injunctive relief, when in fact it's very clear that we will know exactly what our damages are when we retire. At that point in time, prior to that, 20 years before we retire, we have no idea what our damages would be.
The question is when a breach occurred and when you knew or should have known of that breach. Is that not the question?
No, the question is, was it an anticipatory breach, Judge? And a second question is, was it, is it a lawsuit for money owed? And we did raise that issue in our brief, Judge. Again, in our reply brief, actually, it's not our reply brief, it's our opening brief, Judge. In a footnote, we indicated that we cited 1380-108, subsection 4.
The last page in a footnote, you cited...
Yes, we did, Judge. And we argued that to the district court also.
Mr. Zook.
I think my time's up.
Thank you, counsel. This case now stands submitted, and we will issue an opinion in due course.